Master.
Dear brothers and sisters, we are all children of God. We were someday in the lap of God. Ever since we were separated from God, we have forgotten God. And engaged in schisms, bigotry and narrow-mindedness, the result was we are all unhappy. God sends masters to realize that they are all one. Born with the same privilege from God, the same soul of the same essence as that of God, and the same God overhead whom we worship. So they bring this message of unity, which when we forget, all these lead to bigotry, narrow-mindedness and all schism. Masters come, they come, they are not the monopoly of any sect, first of all. They come for all the world over, like sun rises and gives light all around them. No question who, high or low, one country or the other, wearing labels of one religion or the other. So there is no east and west for them. The whole creation is the home of our Father. The earth below and the sky overhead. On my last visit when I came here, there was one meeting held east and west, and men from all countries who had just arrived there then, they were asked to speak on their own behalf. So I was also asked to stand up and say what I had to say. So I told them that there is this whole creation in the house of our Father. So many rooms there are, so many countries are in so many rooms in the house of our Father. All men born alike, with the same privilege from God as I submitted before, same constitution outside and inside, no high, no low, and so in the depths of this ocean of all consciousness, we are all brothers and sisters in God, and whom we worship is the same God by so many names. So the unity exists and we have forgotten. They bring in the message to the world that there is God, who is the maker of all universe. He is the controller of all universe and permeates all creation. This is the message they bring to the world. They say that this world did not come of itself. At the beginning the scientists said it is there. Action-reaction of the matter, but ultimately they have come to the conclusion that Huxley, the great scientist, gave out ultimately that there is a power controlling all creation which is conscious. So such masters, when they come, they say that God is love, and our souls have got love in it. They bring in religion of love, no new religion. And all masters who came in the past, they gave out, love thy God with all thy heart, with all thy soul, with all thy strength. And the second, love thy neighbor as thyself. As God resides in every heart, the same soul being of the same essence of God, we are all brothers and sisters in God, and the same, a man born with the same personality from God. So they say, love God. God resides in every heart. So we should love all, because God resides in every heart, and also we are all brothers and sisters in God. So this thing we forget, they come to revive this truth which exists. Unity already exists and we have forgotten. They say, if you would like to meet God, then what you should do? You should all love all. If you want to meet God, then you should all love all. Hatred for none. Sympathy for all. Peace be unto all the world of earth and lie below God and Guru Nanak Dev. And all of the masters said the same. Tenth Guru, Kabir says the same thing. We should love God, who is the creator of all universe, who is controlling all universe and controlling us in the body too. Man body is a wonderful house we live in. It has got so many apertures, but we cannot run away out of it. Body works for as long as we are in the body. And we are in the body until that power controls us in the body. When that power leaves, we have to leave the body. So, then we should love our God. So Tenth Guru also said the same thing, you see. God resides in every heart. If you want to love God, and you say, whom you do not see, how can you say to love God when you, those whom you see, you do not love them? Because He also resides in every heart. First of all, He resides in our own heart. He is the controlling power keeping us in the body. So in all, there is no heart without it. Somewhere it is manifest. Others, they are, though not manifest, in whom the God is manifest, they are center, they appear before the mankind to guide them properly. So there are so many sins you see in the world, one graver than the other. So Malarumu said, you may drink. So drinking is the mother of all evils. That's a sin, of course. But they say, he said there is still more greater heinous crime than that. And what is that? He said, burn all scriptures. That it is still very grave sin. He said, all right, this is also grave sin, we know, but there is still greater sin than that too. And that is, put all places of worship on fire, burn them down. It's the gravest, of course. But he says there's still most grave than that is, don't torment anybody. Because you want to meet God, He lies in every heart. You have no sympathy for Him, you hate Him. So this is the greatest of all sins. So man body is the highest in all creation. Next to God, even the angels are asked to bow down before the man body. So man body is the highest of all. It is a golden opportunity afforded to us, because in this man body only we can know God, in no other body. So it is said, it is a man, Rig Veda says, it is a Brahmapuri, in which Brahm can be manifested. It is Devapuri. It is the place where God manifests. So they say, love God. This is the religion they bring for the mankind. And they tell us, the rishis, when they return, their soul return from after enjoying the bliss of the higher planes, they selected the man body to enter. Because in man body alone they can know God. Even the gods and goddesses aspire for that man body. And we are fortunate, we have got that man body. So who we are, they say, well, you are conscious entity. Man body, you have got very golden opportunity, of course, to know God. But to know God, you must know yourself first, because it is you who have to know God, not the body. Body is a golden opportunity afforded to us, in which we can know God. So to know God first, we will have to know ourselves. And truly speaking, this man body is not our home. This is golden opportunity afforded to us in which we can go back to our home, true home. So the address, O soul, this man body of this world is not your true home. Your true home is one where it is all consciousness, your man, your conscious entity. So make the best use of this man body. So man body is the treasure house in the body's eyes. Quran says, I am a hidden treasure within you. Why don't you find me? Seek me there. Mawlana Rumi says, outer place of pilgrimage of Muhammad in Makkah, you see Kaaba, this is house of God. He says that Khalilullah Rahman raised, and this man body raised by whom? By God, in the womb of your mother. It is more than appreciated to be the house of God. So all masters, Guru Nanak says, look here, that the treasure of divinity is within you. To find it, just follow the word of some master. How to tap inside, how to withdraw from outside, how to come in contact, open your single eye to see the light of God which is within you. So, truly speaking, body is the true temple of God. It is the body in which what is the light of God is manifest. So this is why it is said, with all light is within us, take heed that the light within you is not darkness. And Christ said, I have come to make people see who do not see. And those who see may be blind. What does it mean? Attention is the outward expression of soul. When our attention withdraws from outside, it is all dark. It's all becoming blind. When you see within your own self there is this darkness now, that the more attention you put in there, the more darkness will be thin, you will see light coming up. So this is what he meant, that I have come to make people see who do not see, and those who see, they may be blind. The blind world in the terminology of the masters is not one who has got no eyes on the forehead, but whose inner eye, the single eye, is not opened. The master come to open that eye within us. So as a man, you see, outer temples are made after the model of man body. All temples are made dome-shaped Hindu temple. There and this put up two symbols of God. God, when He wanted to be many, there was vibration. And vibration results in two things, light and sound. God is light and God is voice of the God. God is the music of the sphere, satinada. So these two symbols were kept in the temples outside, made after the model of man body, put in light and sound. They can kindle and light a candle and ring a bell. In churches, they are nose-shaped, long-shaped. Therein also they put a light candle and the bell is ringing. In the mosques, they are forehead-shaped. There also they light a candle. In all holy places of worship, of one religion or another, all this is the symbol style. So one thing is there. We have those symbols. We are not fully aware what for these symbols stand. for want of practical people. You may be very learned, but those who have not seen the light within, how can they say their light within, or God is light? We do say, God is light. If you have not seen light, then how can you say God is light? This is only what you read books or heard from anybody. So Master says it is just like a blind man saying God is light. He is reverberating in all creation. So if he has not seen, he says, he is in all creation, then it is just like a man with do not see and do not hear. So say, you must see first and then say. Then how many there are such like people in the world? There have been in the past few, even now they are, but there are few, who can open the inner eye to give the light of God within you. So this unity as man, as soul, as God whom we worship, we are all one, unity all exists and we have forgotten. Masters come to have this unity realized by us. If that's like happens, you see, the kingdom of God will come on earth. So ever since we separated from God, as I told you, we are sometimes in the lap of God. We are under great delusion. How? Our souls are under the command of mind. Mind is under the control of outgoing faculties. And outgoing faculties are drawn like anything but the outer enjoyment. So our soul, the outer expression of which is attention, that is identified with the outgoing faculty, body and outer world, so much so that we cannot differentiate ourselves. We say it is my body, we say it is my coat, it is my head, it is my prana, but we cannot separate us practically from us. I say this is my spectacle, I can put it out. I can say my head, because I can put it out. I can say my coat, I can put it out. Can you put it out, my body? So it is we who are living this man body. So masters come to tell us how to come out of the delusion. Moreover, the law of cause and effect, as you sow, so shall you reap, is also very much in action while in earth. And some, on account of what you forgetfulness and a great optical illusion, the ocean goes on coming and going, never ending, because we are the doer. So Master tells us what to do. He says, we must come out of this man body. O man, know thyself, who you are, what you are. All Masters, in the East and the West both, gave up this solution for the whole. This deception, how to come out, how to eliminate this optical deception, you say. Body is made of matter, and the soul is conscious entity. Outside world is also made of matter, both changing at the same speed as our body, and we are identified with the body so much so that we cannot differentiate ourselves. When two things are changing at the same speed and we are identified with it, it appears we are all stationary. How great delusion it is. Optical illusion. The only thing is we can rise above body consciousness. We know ourselves, who we are, what we are. We have got the man body, we have got the intellect, but we are conscious entities. It is you and level the mind, this faculty of this body. We who give strength to the outgoing faculties to see, to hear, to taste. And it is we who are controlled by those things. How pity it is. Us, what to put before the cart. Cart is put before the heart. So Master said, unless all Masters, West, Greek philosophers said the same thing. In their own language, of course, Gnosis, Theodon. All Latin classes at the same time, Nati, Nasi, Tiptum. Pachya Vyasa says, the ultimate goal of all knowledge is to know self. If you know so much about the physical body, so much about the intellect, and you have known little or nothing about your own self, then you are an ignorant man. It is we who have to live the body. It is you who are living the body. And it is you who are now controlled by the body and outgoing faculties like anything. So you will find that the parable to show that one man was praying God. Somebody asked him, what's the matter, what for you pray God? He said, last night thieves came here and took away my heart. People said, what is there to thank God? He said, I am thanking God that I was not riding on the horse, otherwise I would have been taken up. I think he was very wise. He saved the rider and let the horse go. And once you have done, we have kept the horse. The rider is forgot. So Guru Nanak says, unless you analyze yourself with all your attention from all outside and from body below, come up to the feet of the soul at the back of the eyes, and your inner eye is open, the single eye, then single eye be open, thy whole body shall be full of light. Until that, the deception cannot go out. Now, of our own self, why can't we come out of this delusion, I would say? Because we are identified with the outgoing faculties, body and mind and intellect. In all practices that we follow to know God or to know self, they all relate to body, outgoing faculties, mind and intellect. So we are already identified and do practices, follow practices such which relate to those things, how can we rise above body consciousness? Some people, as you see, they have got some backgrounds. They see light, they hear some sound, but they go to the doctor to treat them what is the disease. They do not know what they got to do. So my point is, Guru Nanak says, unless you analyze yourself, rise above body consciousness, you cannot know God. So to know oneself is the first step that we have to take. Other things will follow after that. So Emerson said, that insight. And Christ also said, you know, except ye be reborn, you cannot enter the kingdom of God. Nicodemus, the Jewish head, who was a very learned man, came up to him saying, Lord, we are grown up people, how can we re-enter the womb of the mother and be reborn? And the Christ told him, look here, you are a learned man, people respect you like anything, don't you know that flesh is born of the flesh and spirit of the spirit? Then he said, you must be reborn. To reborn means one birth in this man body, the other birth into the beyond. These things, all masters they told you, East or West makes no difference. They all have the same thing to say in their own language, of course. In the East, among the Hindus, there is a custom to be twice born. Children of 5 years, 7 years, 9 years old, they are made twice born. They are given what? Gayatri Mantra. Perhaps you might have heard about it. It is the mantra considered to be highest. That means rise above bodies, except the ray of the sun was coming up to you and rise to the sun to be one with sun. O Lord, direct our attention to that. That's the prayer. The children of 5 years, 7 years, 9 years old, children were made twice born. They have given this mantra. And at the same time, they have given demonstration of how to rise above body consciousness, open the single eye within or the third eye to see the light of God. The same custom even now prevails amongst the Hindus. They give the same mantra to them, but no demonstration, for want of practical people. So, practically it is something, you see, to rise above body consciousness are dying by the life. are to be reborn. So, all masters have it, learn to die so that you may begin to live. Saint Paul talks that those are initiated in the mystery of the beyond, their soul has the same experience, passed through the same process as a dying man while living the body, reverts to the back of the eyes and his eyes are upturned. There he lives into the beyond. But in that case, the cerebral cord on which is based on the reaction of the past is broken. He never returns. But to die while alive, that cerebral cord is not broken, he has to return. Saint Paul said, I die daily. Take cross daily. On mercy, Quran says, die before you actually die. Somebody reported to Prophet Muhammad, you look at in this death which lead us to the great view. He said, no, it is not such a death. It will lead you from darkness to light. The sun sets this way, it rises the other way. So you got the man body, go and learn to die while alive. This is a golden opportunity, your God. Dadu, Saint of Jesus also says the same, learn to die so that you may begin to live. Guru Nanak says, learn to die daily, 100 times a day, you should get it. At will. All glory and beauty lies within you. Astral plane is more beautiful than the physical one. Cause of still more and subtle spiritual plane is more beautiful and enchanting than the outside. Once you have a bliss of that, you won't like to return. No man doesn't dare to go beyond. Man is afraid of that. And nobody can escape that. That's the pity. All have to leave body. All saints, all incarnations, all kings, all papas, all, one and all. Everybody has to leave the body. And we also have to, you may say further. So, how to conquer death? You know, when there is no escape from it, then we should learn to die. What to die means to leave the physical plane, rise into the beyond. And this is what the Master gave the very first day at the time of initiation. How to rise above body cones. So such like masters are wanted, who know of this world as well as of the beyond. Their body appears to be in the world, but their soul is the mouthpiece of God. They appear to be engaged in so many outer pursuits, but whenever they want, they rise above body consciousness and traverse into the beyond. Those who are competent to that extent, then they are competent to raise you also above body consciousness. Withdraw your attention from all outside, take it to the seat of the soul at the back of the eyes and transcendence into beyond. So we are afraid of death for two reasons. One, we do not know how to leave the body. You see? Scriptures tell us, Puranas tell us that when its soul leaves the body, it has terrible pain, like 1,000 scorpions sting together. One scorpion bites, you see, terrible pain, what to speak of 1,000 scorpions biting together. Mohammedan scriptures tell us the same thing. The soul, when it leaves the body, it experiences the same trouble, what when you put a thorny bush to the rectum, to the elementary terrain, and take out from the mouth. You've seen many men dying in terrible pain. They cannot leave the body. So what Master tell us how to rise up the very first day. Then day-to-day practice, you feel joy to go into the beyond. Kabir says, people are afraid. One thing, no, they do not know how to leave the body. And moreover, they do not know what is the fate awaiting us after the body. Those who sit at the feet of the Masters they know how to leave the body by regular practice. Firstly, the human speaking is given to that effect. And second, they begin to traverse into the beyond. They go jolly. I've been here twice before. I came home very jolly. I know this is a place. So it is something, sunsetting this way and rising the other way. So the Master will pray, O God, send us such like men who can take us out of the box of our body.
Good evening and welcome to the Satsang for Master Kirpal Singh. The recording you listened to was the first 30 minutes of a talk entitled We Are All Children of God. It was given at the Mission Church at Santa Clara University on November 16, 1972 in Santa Clara, California. Our reader tonight is David Halliburton. Hello, David.
Hi, Christine. I'll be reading this evening from a talk called The Heart's True Yearning, which is a talk published in the April 1973 issue of Satsandesh. We are all lovers, devotees of a higher power. Thousands of lovers, but the beloved is one for all. He whom we desire is the beloved of the whole world and is the one God for all men, not specifically for Muslims only, or for Hindus only, or for Christians only. God is one for man, for all creation, and all his devotees have the desire to meet that very same one. Those who really desire him in the true sense are actually his true relatives. And that person who tells us about him is truly our brother and our friend. Within each master soul is great devotion for his guru, and without this devotion, none can reach realization. For instance, Christ told his followers, I am the vine, ye are the branches. He that abideth in me and I in him, the same bringeth forth much fruit. For without me, ye can do nothing. The devotee cannot do without the guru. It means that as long as one is not truly joined to one's guru, one cannot really be his devotee. And furthermore, cannot become a true devotee of the Lord. Guru precedes God, for we have not yet seen God, and we must become as subtle or as fine as he is to be able to do so. Each person views life from his own level. To illustrate this, if we study the atmosphere, no life can be seen there by the physical eye due to the extremely fine substance of the atmosphere and the very coarse level of the eyesight. And yet, if we raise our level of vision by using a microscope, which magnifies 700 times, bringing everything to the eye's coarse level, we then see that the atmosphere is filled with forms of life, tiny microbes, which are ever in existence, even though we cannot see them with the naked eye. That eye has not developed the ability to perceive these more subtle expressions of life. So, if man is not as high as God, then what is his first step? Guru precedes God, for God manifests in the Guru. And from man's level, he, therefore, comes before God. He is God-man, God plus man. If a disciple truly becomes a guru-man, he also becomes God-man. Unless one sees, how can one meditate upon it? How can a person put all his attention on that which he has not seen? So first, devotion to the guru is very necessary. Guru is not the body. Guru is that power which is manifesting upon a human pole, and as such is never born and never dies. All masters have taken up the body and then left it, and we must also do the same. That power works through the physical form. Brahm speaks out through the body. Without the body, what can Brahm say? But the pole through which he is manifesting is also called Guru, because he is manifesting there. Devotion must of necessity start with the body. We see him, and further, we see a glimpse of what he is manifesting in his eyes. This raises us to a higher level, and so the importance of this Guru Bhakti, or devotion to the Guru, has been stressed by all masters. Christ taught the same thing, and St. Paul echoed this when he said, "I live, yet not I, but Christ liveth in me." Hafiz Sahib explained that his heart was so full of his beloved that the thought of himself being there was gone. He became one with his beloved. He also says, "I have become the body. You have become the life." They should not say afterwards that you and I were different. All masters say the same things in various ways. Hafiz Sahib also says, "I have been grafted to my friend, the Guru." When you graft two branches, what happens? The fruit from that appears to be the same, but the color and fragrance is that of the mother tree. When one is grafted to the Guru, there is no fear of anything. From then on, there is no birth, no death, no more coming and going in creation, no illusion, no negative power. For one has been drawn into the very nectar of life. One is plunging into it. Anyone who has done this has no fear of death. So devotion to the Guru is the first step, and those who become one with him become one with the Lord. This is the simplest way of realizing him. In truth, we are soul. The soul is of the same essence as that of God, who is all consciousness. And so we are a conscious entity, a drop of the ocean of all consciousness. That ocean is swelling full and can be called the Lord or God. Every drop of essence desires to return to its source. It is a natural inclination, and this natural yearning remains with us in one form or another. We want to be happy. We want lasting peace, and so on. We seek the goal in all manner of ways, but the search is always outward. If we come to realize that the goal lies within us, sorrow overcomes us with the knowledge of that wasted time. The natural yearning to meet the Lord is innate in every human being, although most people seek him outwardly, wherever his name is represented. If a man is disappointed in his search, again he turns to seek elsewhere, and so his life becomes a series of wasted efforts. As a child, man just plays. Then he goes on to indulge in all the sensual pleasures and the intellectual pursuits. Finally, he begins to realize that there is no true happiness or lasting peace in all this, and starts searching for something else. If his yearning is strong enough, and his search sincere, established within him, then the Lord himself knows this and makes arrangements for the seeker to find someone to help him, someone who has already realized the Lord, someone who may be called by any name you wish, but is, in fact, a guru. I will now take a hymn of Guru Ram Das Sahib, who was an extraordinary devotee of his guru. The Lord's arrow of love has pierced my heart. There's a certain type of arrow which has a hooked head, and when it enters the target, it cannot be removed. The master is explaining that his yearning for the Lord has become a consuming desire, a tormenting yearning of devotion and love, which has developed within the heart. And like the hooked arrow, it is there to stay. When this arrow strikes, one cannot remove it, even if he wants to. My mind is in torment for a glimpse of the Lord, like a man athirst without water. Without a glimpse of the Lord, there is no peace, no satiety, and each second is agonizing. The condition of a man parched with thirst is bad. He gasps and pants, and there is no relief for him until he gets water to drink. God is love, and the soul is his entity, and is therefore also love. Its nature is to be attached to something, but at present the soul's love is attached to the physical form, and all its various environments like wife, husband, children, friends, property, money, and so on. It is natural for the soul to love, and yet all these worldly things are perishable, and they change. What is more, one cannot remain with them. Either we must leave, or they must leave. The day of separation will come eventually. So the soul gains no continuous happiness through these associations. Guru Arjan says, attachment develops for whatever is seen. How then will I meet you, O imperishable Lord? It is a prayer of the soul asking how it can become connected to the Lord when it is tied to the worldly things. We are all in the same condition. Yet we ask for perpetual happiness and go on to seek it among the perishable things, which, in a single second, can be gone from our sight. So the masters advise us, those who want lasting happiness should live in God's protection, which is permeating in all creation. Remember, all masters are true devotees, and they teach this devotion to the world. They rejoin the souls back to the Lord, for they are themselves one with him, and desire others to enjoy that oneness. They want to rejoin them to the Lord, not to themselves. Kabir Sahib says, by my doing, nothing happens, but only by his wish. Take any master's words. You will find they sing the Lord's praises. Guru Ram Das says that the Lord's arrow has pierced his heart. Only a wounded man can know another's wounded condition. One master describes the condition thus: the place where my beloved reposes is on top of a gibbet or a gallows. How then can I meet him? When that strong yearning develops within, the soul cannot rest until it meets the Lord. His desire is only to go to God, or that God should come to him. When the Lord does not come, he wants only to gaze at him. Neither he nor the Lord should see anyone else but each other. These are expressions of true love. Khusro Sahib described his yearning by wanting the Lord to reside in his eyes, that the world may not see him and he may not see the world. And Kabir Sahib says, I make a room of the eye and spread the bed of the pupil. I draw the veil of the eyelashes and woo the beloved. It is another expression of true love for the Lord. The true devotee has tremendous love in his heart for realization of the Lord, and he in whom such love is developed becomes an overflowing cup of love. Such a person can safely be called a guru, in whose company others gain a small portion or an infection of that love. You can say a little awakening of it, so that they become dyed in a little of that color. Even one who gets no direct contact with the guru and yet absorbs the atmosphere which surrounds the guru does get somewhat affected, and he feels that there is something there. So the burning love to realize God seems like a parching thirst. God cannot be realized without this love. It is an impossibility. As God is love and our soul is his entity, it can happen only through love. All outer practices, rituals, and devotions are performed to help the development of this love. But we perform them like gymnastics, and therefore no love or sincerity awakens in the heart. A Muslim prophet tells us that should we do this for 100 years, even then we would not become a true disciple. For without the love awakened and the flame within kindled, how can the Lord be realized? In such a condition, the Lord's secret cannot be revealed. For love is a consuming flame within which only the thought of the beloved can remain. That is written in the Quran. Such love is something like a hawk. Wherever it comes to sit, all the other birds fly away. The 10th guru declares, Hear ye all, I tell you the truth. God can be realized by those who love. The pain of this inner torment only the Lord knows. No one else can know the suffering of the soul that is separated from its Lord except the Lord himself, or one who is also suffering similarly. I can tell you of my own condition around the year 1914. Background does have some bearing on one's life. One in whom this yearning for God takes root has some impressions from the past, which come to the fore and develop during this birth. In those days, while working in the office, the tears would flow without reason, spoiling the papers on the desk. Within myself, I would ask, Oh God, what is happening? At home, the family also could not understand what was happening, but I had recently been transferred to the place of my parents, and they thought the tears were due to this. What can other people know of the condition of one's heart? If the enigma of the mystery of life enters the heart, the person knows no peace until it has been solved. The questions continue to repeat. What is life? Who am I? I've often mentioned the mood of deep thought that I experienced at a young person's deathbed at Lahore. If an individual's life is pure and chaste, the inner knowledge awakens without effort. This is a natural function. Having all this, yet I had not solved the mystery of life. And while sitting beside that dying person, it occurred to me, this person is dying. There is something in him which is also in me, but it is leaving this body. Then, what is that something? I could not at that time perceive the answer, for I did not have the knowledge. What is it that is working in everyone and yet leaves a dying person? I sat there and witnessed this individual call all those near and dear and ask their forgiveness for any wrong or any act that may have displeased them. After this, the eyes closed and the soul left the body. I was wonderstruck to witness this amazing thing. Before my eyes, the body was lying there, and yet that which had motivated it was gone. It was still in me, but it had left that body. Where it had gone, I did not know. All the way to the cremation ground, I fathomed this puzzle. And on arrival, I saw that an elderly man had died and was being cremated. Within a few yards of each other, the young person and the old man, the two extremes of life, youth and old age, were consumed in the flames. My heart was deeply affected with the realization that there is no escape from this death for any of us. Learned or unlearned, all men are imprisoned in gross ignorance. This mystery of life entered my heart and did not leave. From then, I started searching day and night for the answer in all the scriptures I could find. Whole nights were spent reading avidly, but I could find no solution in the holy scriptures and philosophies. Yes, there were indications and references, but they gave no practical solution. Of course, the solution cannot be written, for it is a scientific, practical self-analysis, the experience of which can be had only by sitting at the feet of some master soul, who will put one on the way in order that the experience may be increased daily. When I finally reached Hasur's feet in the year 1914, the understanding of this inner knowledge came. There are many tears for worldly things, but who cries for the Lord? People who have never done so do not realize what kind of torment that is. It is not something within our control. It either comes or does not. It is pain, black clouds, which bring the promise of rain, the blossoms of the fruit tree, which bring the promise of fruit to come. This tormented condition indicates a heart wherein lies the hope of the Lord's coming. You can say it heralds His coming. And Guru Ram Dass says that only the Lord Himself knows the pain of that heart, the inner torment. Guru Amar Das once said, 1 second without you, O Lord, seems like 50 years. A certain poet says, O statistician, you have calculated much, but can you reckon the nights of separation, how long they are? The whole world cries incessantly for the world. The Lord's devotees cry only for the Lord. If by laughter and play the Lord could be realized, then who would be without Him? Tears are very necessary, for without them the deeply buried sanskaras, or karmic impressions, of eons of births cannot be washed away. The water from the eyes has a marvelous cleansing power. Maulana Rumi has a very beautiful way of putting it when he says that if one wishes to do the Hajj, the pilgrimage to Mecca, then he should go by waters of the sea, for the road by dry land will never take one there. The waters of the sea are the tears flowing down in torrents from the eyes. He is my true brother, who will tell me something of my Lord, the Beloved. It is but natural, being in such a condition, that one would appreciate anyone who could speak of his beloved with real knowledge. God is loved, and so is he who can tell of him. Then, what about the one who can take us to him? One should sacrifice oneself upon such a person, and live faithfully according to his wishes. In true love, one becomes rich and great, and surrenders all the world and the worldly things. Guru Arjan says, "I will give myself to he who will take me to my beloved love." The yearning is for someone, and yet he is prepared to give his whole life to one who will take him to that someone. Why? The yearning is for a glimpse of him. He yearns for a glimpse of the Lord, and for that is prepared to enslave himself for life. What do worldly people know of this? Does the question of religion arise here? If there are four drunkards, they will develop love for each other without a thought of their different religions, because of the single attraction of intoxication. Brothers, we are all devotees of the single one. Why not have love for each other? If we do not love each other, I can only say that love for the Lord has not awakened within us. Love for our fellow men is the first lesson for those who walk the path of spirituality, for God is in each being. Since I got the company of the sages, none is an enemy, none a stranger. I developed love for all. The company of the Master teaches us that God is in every being, and one should accept everyone in love. The subject of caste or religion does not arise here. He is a Satguru who brings all children of God together. When sitting before the Master, no thoughts occur that one person is this, another is that, etc. Remember, all worldly relationships will be left behind, and only the true relationship will accompany you. He says that the true brother or friend is he who tells of the beloved. During the time of Hasur, a similar question arose, that among the initiated, some have reached the goal by their practices, and some are still learning in school. So, where does this true relationship apply? Baba Sawan Singh Ji explained that everyone has to cross the river, but some cross in the first boat, some in the second, and so on. After all, the landing stage on the other side is the same for all boats, and all the travelers will meet there. The true relationship made by the Guru cannot be broken. Like beads on an unbreakable string, the Guru strings us together. Even on the worldly level, one feels very friendly and amiable to anyone who speaks of one's beloved. So, ignoring all castes, religions, social orders, and differences, the devotee's friend is he who tells of the Lord. The soul's caste is not Hindu, Muslim, Christian, Buddhist, but is the same as the Lord's. This true relationship has ever been in existence, but we have forgotten it. When the Master comes, he enlivens that relationship and makes one into a conscious co-worker of the divine plan. He sees the same nature lying in all. It is a part of nature's character that each aspect reverts to its source, and each species blends with its own. Man's inclination is to love his fellow man, and to love God. this nature is innate within him. Let us meet, O Sakhi, and sing the Beloved's praises. Take the Satguru's knowledge. We are all Sakhis, which means female friends, one male, all others are female. All souls are female, and God Himself is the sole male, meeting whom the everlasting marriage takes place. Worldly marriages can last perhaps 10, 15, or even 100 years. They could reach 1,000 years even, but the soul which meets the Lord realizes the marriage, which is true and permanent. He says that true friends should sit together and talk about the Lord. How? By taking the knowledge from the Satguru, for meeting the Satguru prepares the way for access to the Lord. Well, I'll stop there. I've been reading from a talk called The Heart's True Yearning, a talk published in the April 1973 issue of Satsandesh. Thank you, Master.
Thank you, David, for reading Master's very gracious words to us. There were 56 participants at tonight's satsang. Thank you, everyone, for listening. And thank you, Master, for bringing us together to strengthen our loving devotion to you.
So we have to decide what we want at heart of ours. Are we here only for the worldly things? Are we here only for the name and fame of the world? Are we here only to have things of the other world or heaven? Are we really after only emancipation from birth and death? A real lover wants none of that, you see. He wants God, and God alone.